You're listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. In today's episode, the podcast will take a break from our normal interview format, instead presenting a palate cleanser, where UCB teachers and staff present official UCB news and updates, focus on a specific element of longform improv, and offer experimental one-off episodes. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
You're listening to Long-Form Conversations here on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. Today is a bit of a palate cleanser episode. I am with my dear friend Brian Husky, longtime performer, longtime buddy, fellow conspirator in a big movie project we did together. Brian, how are you today?
I'm good. I'm fighting a little bit of a cold, as there's one going around the city. So be careful.
Is there ever a time in Los Angeles that there isn't a cold going around?
Well, I'm sure certain areas are going to be, you know, a little more cold-ridden than others. But in my, in the eastern part of the city right now, I'm encountering a lot of snifflies, a lot of complainings, a lot of...
In the eastern zone?
Yeah,
Echo Park, Silver Lake?
Yeah.
As far as downtown or no?
I haven't gotten down there. Maybe I'll pop down and just like walk into a coffee place and say, who here is sick? And just see who volunteers that information.
And is this, you would do this out of boredom or out of curiosity?
I'm sure like out of the gate, the listeners are like, oh, wow, they're talking like old men having a conversation about like sickness and health and stuff. So I'd love to see how deep this goes, and I want to sort of, you know, support that. So maybe it's an experiment to see how far I'll go in just finding out how many people are sick.
Well, it also reminds me of that movie Outbreak. It's like epidemiology where you try to source the beginning of a virus.
I guess I could swab people's mouths.
You ever done the DNA testing?
No, I did Ancestry.
That's DNA testing.
Yeah, but it doesn't tell me like what my, you know, my sort of like... what kind of foods I should eat or any of that kind of stuff.
What is that? That's two things. One, tell me about your ancestry. Were you surprised by where your family or lineage came from?
No.
What did it tell you?
It's all England, Scotland, you know, just that area. Tiny bit of Germany. And then there was like one dot over...
Genghis Khan.
Yeah.
Raping women.
Yeah. But it was
680.
It sort of, I was looking at it, I was like, oh, it seems like I didn't, my lineage goes back like maybe 250 years or something. I feel very recent of this earth.
Okay. That's your lineage that you can document like Mayflower papers and things like that.
Yeah.
That's pretty good though. I don't know. Mine is, I have a lot of Irish, and then on my mom's side, there's like Slovenia, which is basically Austria now. It's what they used to call Bohemia, and then English.
Oh, yeah.
English, Welsh. Welsh is like Walsh.
Yeah. So. See, that's more than I know. My family tree is so fractured that I don't know. I mean, I guess that's what explains the blood type. Sort of like, all right, I don't know much about my dad's side of the family or him. So, you know, it's sort of like, it's more information that I got from my mom. And then her parents remarried. So I grew up with like, the Hancocks of the family I wasn't blood related to, but they're basically the family I grew up with and stuff. So
the environmental factors,
yes.
Not the genetic factors.
Not the genetic factors.
And what do you think defines a person more, their genes or their environment?
Well, research says both. I think environment determines a lot more of it. But I think the genealogy will sort of reveal things as you develop. You know, or it might be sort of in concert, like you'll have the sort of the environment will shape you and then you'll have these other tendencies or sort of behaviors that are just inherent to you. And that's how you become the black sheep.
Sure. There's the randomness of like the DNA strand aligning itself.
Right.
Like you can have genes, but they don't dictate what you're going to inherit how they'll align themselves.
Yeah. There's this, I think maybe it's a book out. This guy did a study of all these twins that got separated.
Oh, love those studies.
Yeah, and they were just talking about how they grew up in, you know, different family environments and stuff. And then when they met each other, they felt like things made sense. As much as they're like, oh, yeah, I always identified with the so-and-sos. This is who I grew up. This is how we are. When they would meet their blood kin, they'd be like, oh, you know what? No, this is how it really is. And for a lot of them, it was kind of like a homecoming thing. And a lot of people, it like screwed them up. They're like, whoa, God, wait, who am I? What have I been doing?
Yeah. Did you know Kulop did a story about her origin?
Yeah.
She's an adopted gal from Cambodia.
Yeah. What did she find out?
I think she met her birth mom and she met her sister, I believe. I think I haven't seen the documentary though, but
yeah,
I find that very fascinating as well. Like that's a big, the cross continental leap of that.
Yeah. It's weird. Just like what you know. I always thought my parents split up when I was 4 and then my mom remarried when I was 5. But I only recently found out that they split up just after I was born. So,
oh, you always in your mind thought it was 4?
Yeah. Because I had this whole thing, like I knew I grew up, we lived with my grandmother for a while, and that's the only memory I have, you know, when you start to have memories as a kid and stuff, you're like, oh yeah, you know, grew up there. So I don't know what the timeline there was, but in my mind it was, oh yeah, we got married, I mean, they got divorced, moved into my grandparents, and then shortly later she married my dad, the dad I grew up with.
Uh-huh.
But it was this whole other thing where,
Your dad was a Hancock?
My dad was a Clifford. So I would have been Brian Clifford, which is not a great name.
So your genetic father's name was Clifford?
Yeah.
Was he a preacher?
No. My genetic dad was a part-time magician and photographer and newscaster. He was kind of a jack of all trades all over the place.
In what part of the country?
In Charlotte, North Carolina.
Charlotte, North Carolina.
And then my dad that I grew up with used to be a preacher, and he left the church, I guess, before, I don't know when, either 9 months or 4 years before he met my mom. But he worked for the electric company doing right
away. So he left the church to marry your mom?
No, he just left the church because he got pissed off at the church.
And then met your mom shortly thereafter?
I don't know. That's, again, it's like that, my perception of what I grew up with was like, oh yeah, they got divorced and they got remarried, but it was a 4-year span. So I don't know how long his thing was.
Do you think she could have said, this is lame, get out, let's get out of here? Do you think she could have?
To the church?
Yeah.
No.
No.
No, I think she would have been into it, I think.
She might have been, okay.
He occasionally would do substitute preaching at his old church. He left the church because his first wife cheated on him and was just a very self-destructive and destructive woman. And he had always been trying to sort of like help her and stuff. And it finally became too much. And when he found out she had been cheating on him, he kind of had like a breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
So they split up. He got better. He came back to the church. He's like, I'm so glad I have the church. You know, this community means so much to me. And they're, you know, Southern Baptists. They're like, actually, we're not comfortable having a pastor whose wife's a whore and can't keep his family together. So we want you to leave.
So they rejected him.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so he in turn sort of rejected the church itself and God, basically. He was very disillusioned.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then sometime after that disillusionment, he met your mother.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And he was going to, they met at church. But once they got married, he kind of just stopped going. He's like, I don't believe this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on in his life.
Did your mom go or no?
She did.
She did.
She did.
She
and
still went.
Yeah. And then when he stopped going a certain period, it just fell off, you know. My grandmother's always like a big, big church goer. Like a really important part of her.
Your mom's mom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got it.
Ruby,
and that would be
Ruby Hancock.
Ruby Hancock. And that would be Baptist as well?
She was Presbyterian.
And what do Presbyterians believe? Or what is a Presbyterian service?
I don't know. Boring.
Boring.
Oh, yeah. Sleepy making they're as
all,
a kid.
They're all rather boring.
Oh, my God.
Just all the, I remember, all the services.
I remember that feeling as a kid of going to church and just like the heaviness of just like a tryptophan pumped room that's like a little too hot, just instant sleepiness. Just like, and how painful it was to try to sing. Like singing choir songs was always like, I was like, what are we doing? Nobody knows this tune. We're all reading it. We're learning it for the first time here. This is crazy.
This is a goddamn rehearsal. Lighten up, everyone.
And I would always act like I was sick when I would go to church. Like, Mom, I don't feel good.
Like you don't want to go.
Or once I got there, I'd always like.
Was there a sick room where you could dodge out and hang out?
I would just
like
go.
Like a cry room?
No, I would just go walk around the halls. I love that their
exploring.
Church. Exploring. Yeah. Oh, my God. A church for kids to just like walk around and how musty it smelled and stuff.
I used to set up the Montessori school at our church. Mm. So our Catholic church, Our Lady of Mount Carmel in the suburbs. I had a job on the weekends where we had set up they rented out space, but it was fun to have keys to the church and to make coffee and hot chocolate. I was like a junior in high school or senior.
Wow.
It was kind of cool though to roam the church hallways and go to the places where like Jesus was locked up and stuff. Or the cloaks.
Jesus the gimp.
Well, the cloaks, not Jesus.
Oh my God, they keep Jesus in the basement?
Jesus was the neighboring school's mascot. It was a goat. It was all sports rivalry.
Jesus the goat.
From Hinsdale Central.
That's funny.
I was going to ask you, do you see something that maybe you got from your genetic father and something you got from your environmental in a psychological way?
I totally got, well, it's interesting. Like as far as what I got from my dad, because I heard all these stories, you know, as a kid.
Of the magician.
And
the newsman.
And the photographer. And I used to be a photographer, and I got into that. So I don't know how much of that was that I think I'm good at it.
So you are a good photographer.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was fishing. And so.
We can tighten that up in post sync.
Yeah.
He'll say, I used to do photography and then have my response
because
say quickly thereafter, you are a good photographer.
Yeah, because you like rolled your eyes and I was like.
It's just like you're so desperate sometimes. Yes, Brian, we love you.
Yeah. Do you? I mean, do you know who I am though?
Well, we're finding out, aren't we?
That's what this is about. That's what this palate cleansing is. Because everybody is like, I love improv. Let's talk about
the rest. These guys are not improvising. So go ahead about the magic your father.
Yeah, so I just heard these stories and there's something that was intriguing to me that somebody that I'm related to had this completely different world existence. You know, he did things that nobody else in my family did. So my mom was a teacher. My dad did right of way for the electric company, which is basically going through like the country and saying, hey, we're going to put a power, you know, a tower here on your land. You can't do anything about it. So he was kind of a bad guy.
Eminent domain purchases.
Yeah. So it was, I think there's something that piqued my interest to kind of go that way. But I mean, at the same time, I just was always interested in that stuff. I was always interested in comedy and art. I fancied myself being, I thought I was going to be a writer, but I didn't like to read. I like ideas, but I was like,
how do you get smarter if you don't like to read? Like, isn't reading the only way to get smart?
No, apparently not, because I am brilliant.
You're smart. I'm just curious how, or whatever smart is. But I mean, how do you educate yourself more if you're not reading?
I think you have to be open-mindedness.
It makes you smart?
It allows you to take in information or be open to it. You know what I mean? I mean, I would read, you know.
Because there's a lot of dumb hippies. For example.
Yeah.
And I think the stereotype of hippies is that they're open-minded, like, hey, man, anything's cool.
That's true.
So go deeper on that for me.
I guess.
Explain what you mean.
Well, just thinking in terms of, I was never a good reader. Like, my mom was always trying to get me to read, and I would sort of just, like, It was like church. I would get sleepy and fall asleep in the middle of reading. But I liked what I was ingesting. It was maybe just, maybe I needed, if Audible books had been around earlier, I would have taken in a lot more. Yeah, it's more of a mechanics thing of how my body.
Your intake. No, I'm a good listener. Like, I probably take in a lot of audio news and a lot of audio podcasts and a lot of audio book.
Because my daughter can read, like, she devours books. Like, I'll get her a book, she reads it in like 2 days. I'm like, this should last you 6 months. That's how long this would last me. Because I'll read a little bit and go put it down, read it.
Or is her comprehension legit? Or is she just racing? Because sometimes Jude, my oldest, he'll race through something. I'm like, come here. You're just like he does read fast, but sometimes he hops.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, no, you should read the whole thing.
Right. I think she's pretty good.
Yeah.
She'll replay stuff back to me.
That's a gift.
Yeah. Or if she's not into it, she'll just bail. She's like, I don't like this. And I'm always like, well, give it a chance. She's like, no, not into it.
What is she reading these days?
She's not. That it's sort of stopped.
She quit reading.
She's quit reading. She's
for
just,
real.
Yeah. She's very
with the new haircut. She quit reading. With was it a whole personality shift?
Yeah. She's slime is her thing.
She's all about the slime business.
She's all about slime. She's getting a little TV and internet-y, which is kind of
she wants to make a YouTube channel of her slime business?
No, she has a Instagram.
I know.
Yeah. No, she doesn't. Sells slime. No, I mean that she's just really into like binge watching series and stuff, which this is a thing where I'm like, I don't know, because she's choosing, like, she sought out The Office and she watched all The Office and now she's watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And like, you know, for me, it was like Carol Burnett and Andy Griffith and the Monkees. And like, those were my shows, like the ones that
my kids legitimately turn me on to, like One Day at a Time on Netflix.
Yeah.
And it's really good.
Yeah.
And they've made me a huge Bob's Burgers fan. I wouldn't have pursued it.
Yeah.
So they have good taste and they do binge certain shows, but I don't mind it. I feel like their taste has been pretty good.
Yeah, that's
right. And like, and it maybe is the learning you're talking about. Like, there is like information, maybe through the guise of comedy, or One Day at a Time is also dramatic.
And it's also, it's a big identity thing. Like, and this is, you know, any parent is going to be like, oh, I identify with what you're going through, so I will support it. I don't identify what you're going through, so that seems like a threat, or this is off, you know, off script for me. And those things with her where I'm like, well, I mean, that's what I did. I would just like love to watch these shows and think about them and you know, try to ape the bits from them and stuff. And when she does that stuff, I'm proud, you know, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm willing to sort of say like, yeah, I mean, sure, you're willing to watch five seasons of TV in 2 weeks or something. But that's just sort of how it is now. They have the ability and resources to just like,
well, we binged,
chug it.
Yeah, we binged over Christmas break. We binged the second season of Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And it was like two a night and it was really fun.
Yeah. No, that
was a really fun family thing and the kids remembered it. And I paused it when it got too scary and Cece's still six-ish.
Yeah.
Going to be seven, not for a while. So I had to watch her a little bit, but it was really fun. But it is, it's the balance thing. You just have to make sure it's not all binging Netflix.
Yeah.
But it, I think it's objectively a good time.
Yeah.
I don't think it's bad for you.
No, I mean, I watched Stranger Things, the first season, and I was like, you may want to check this out. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, will you watch it with me? And then we watched both seasons together. And that, like you said, it was great. It was a total just like, oh my God, we're going to do this. This is so great. Mm-hmm. And it would be like two at a time. And then, you know, she'd always be like, let's do a third one. I was like, no, can't.
I remember saying when my kids, I took them through, since the relaunch of Star Wars, whatever it was, 3-4 years ago, I took them through I took them through the three greats that I grew up with, you know, in the movie theater releases. And then we went. But they instantly, after like the first or second one, they were like, pause it, rewind it. They would like a segment. And then they were like, that guy's from whatever. Can we watch that movie now?
Oh, yeah.
Like
they would jump around.
They were already like, can we see another one with the Ewoks, Dad? We like the Ewoks. Which one? What is there another one that has more Ewoks?
Oh.
Like, their concept of manipulating a thing that I saw in a movie theater one summer for 90 minutes and then had to wait 2 more years to see another one.
Right.
They were like, pause it, rewind it, buy this one, get another one, show me the other versions.
Yep.
Rewind it, turn on director's comp, like all that manipulation of what I thought was like a sacred document.
Yeah. It's kind of like
just back and forth with it. They interact with it.
Yeah. It's weird. It's like watching a play. It's like, hey, let's see what's backstage. Oh, cool. You're coming on stage next. Oh, what else have you done? Yeah.
Who's the killer? Can I ask who's the killer? Why do you carry the axe?
Yeah.
So it is interactive in a good way. And they also love to know things beforehand so they don't get scared.
Oh, yeah.
Which I find cute. Like, they're like, Dad, how does he die and why does he die? I'm like, do you want to know or you don't want to know?
Oh, well.
Like, I think I want to know. Like, Jude's like that. He doesn't want to be totally shocked. He would love to read. Lately, when we've been reading plot descriptions of some of the music. We listen to musicals on the way to school, like Evan Hansen and Adam's Family, and because kids like musicals. I like musicals, too. And then we'll read at night. We'll go, what's the story Evan Hansen about? What's Adam's Family about? And Jude wants to know it because he knows at some point he's going to see it in his life. So he wants to know what the story is before he then goes to see the story.
Ah. Yeah, I think she's pretty game for
being surprised.
Yeah. Sometimes she will. I mean, she's asked that and I'm like, no, just wait. It'll be better. Because if you know it's coming, you're going to just be like, oh, yeah, that wasn't as impacting as I thought it would be. We watched Jurassic Park this week, which I had never seen. The original one.
First one. Okay.
And it was kind of crazy, like how, I mean, a lot of it, you know, is pretty puppety looking, some of the stuff, but like the first Tyrannosaurus Rex, we were both like, oh my God, like grabbing each other's arms and stuff. It was great.
In front of the TV?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was fun. It was nice to be like, oh yeah, it's not just this thing that's sort of like just there, you know? And then, but at a certain point she's like, so wait, there are more of these? Oh, yeah. She's like, why? Why would they let them build another park? That doesn't make any sense.
Oh, in the story of it?
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, right? I was like, that's the power of greed. She's like, no, nobody would let that happen. I'm like, well, you kind of, yeah, I know.
They might.
Yeah. So I don't know what happens in the second one, but we're going to watch
it. There's a lot of goodness to come.
Yeah.
They're all good. I don't know what their names are, Jurassic. Whatever,
yeah.
Revisited, or I couldn't tell you the title.
Jurassic.
I've seen them all.
Yeah.
The kids like them. They always hum the.
I would say the ending of Jurassic Park, so weird, where they're in the helicopter and it just sort of feels like they're just all really pretty happy. Like the kids survived and they're snuggling up to Sam Neill.
The ordeal of it all.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like it's not PTSD. It's just like, wow, that was pretty crazy. You really messed up, old man. That's cool.
I think the survival of the ordeal. Do you remember seeing the Tom Hanks movie where he fights the pirates in the African Sea? He's a captain of a ship.
Yeah.
And then the whole ordeal ends or something. And then he just slowly breaks down.
Yeah.
There's something cool about that. Like the residual.
That's what it should be. But I guess.
Yeah.
But Spielberg's not going to have that, you know. I mean, he's like the two kids like shaking and sort of like unable to be touched or, you know, whatever, cowering in the corner.
That's not his story.
No,
but he likes a happy ending.
Philo was like,
good.
She was very confused. Like, why are they acting that way? They just were, they almost all died. What's going on? They all are acting like they just came back from the best vacation they've ever had and they're all relaxed.
And I was like, Is there a consistent, like Spielberg has a style or a point, except for maybe Schindler's List. He generally likes the happy ending or the hero winning out and the sort of, I don't know if it's schlocky, but he does juice it a little bit, the emotion.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have a tendency in your creative, obviously it'd be funny, right? Like if I watched a Brian Husky play or movie or character, if you did a show of 5 characters, would there be a theme?
They'd all be frustrated. I think there's a lot of frustration there's a lot of kind of like imperfect authority.
Frustration makes me laugh, though. I have to say, like, a frustrated man, woman, funny.
Like, one of my heroes is Don Knotts. And so he was this guy who thought he was bigger than he was. He had, like, this false authority thing. And I love that. And I think I had, you know, at times have identified with that. And then, you
like
know.
Like, you had, like, you were captain of the patrol team, the crossing guards. Like, you had false authority in what situations?
Oh, just...
Lifeguard?
No, no.
Boss
I think it,
at
I think
McDonald's?
It's sort of like the face you present to people, where you're sort of like, oh yeah, I got this. Where internally you're like, I don't got this. I don't know what's going on. I don't know. I heard this interview with Jason Alexander, and he was talking about his first girlfriend was like, you know, you come off really cocky. And he's like, what? What are you talking about? Like, I'm the most insecure person I know. And she's like, you come off really cocky. And he realized that he like was putting up this big front a lot of times because he felt that way internally, you know. And I think I've identified with that, that kind of like, you know, nervousness and stuff. And yeah, and I think the other thing is sort of, which used to, I've gone in and out of like sort of loving it and then sometimes being like, I don't like being identified with that, but sort of like having like a internal rage.
Or high energy, certainly.
High
yeah.
energy, yeah.
But it's rage, fun. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely rage. I mean, I think that's more of my, like, more in the improv stuff. Okay. Because you get to, I mean, that's the, you know, now we're having long form conversation, but it's like the fact that we get to be in public and just unfiltered kind of like make, you know, an unconscious choice. You know, I'm going to make a character choice, but it's informed by who I am or the position I'm taking. Like, you get to play out a lot of mental stuff on stage. Which is great.
I never think of that, but that is true.
Oh, it's
totally absolutely true. I do know that, like, when I do a show, because I don't perform as much anymore. I do like one show a month, maybe. I do a podcast here, but once a month, maybe at best, in terms of pure improv, old school. But I always feel great afterwards. Like, I fucking love it. I do.
Oh my God!
And it is like church, bringing it back. Like, it is the one thing that I think is like spiritually enriching, inherently good for you, is to like do comedy with friends or to do comedy with other artists that are talented in an audience, and then to like push the boundary and find something meaningful or engaging with that audience in that moment.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah, and it's interesting that there's, you know, there's the variance of people who, you know, like Gimberling and Gelman and those guys, like the Ruru guys, like it was all about sort of like testing the audience and pushing the line and just seeing how dark and hard they could go. And
the cracked out era too was about that.
And and when I was performing with naked babies, like Cordry and Seth and John Bowie, our whole thing was sort of like about, we were very self-reflective, and so we would do a lot of the stuff was sort of like our first show was called We Hate Myself. And it was all this stuff about sort of just like being at odds with who you were. Mm. Whether, I mean, they were dumb bits, but like at the core of them, they were sort of, you know.
Hating yourself?
Yeah, about, you know, being sort of.
Modesty or something?
No, I think it was like mid-30s, trying to figure out who the fuck we were and what we wanted. Like Bowie and I we were not actors when we started. We were both had to give ourselves permission to start to do it. And Cordry was an actor. Mm-hmm. And so we all looked to him as like, oh, you're our leader, you know, our kind of guide. And Seth was this outlier Californian guy who was like, oh my God, he's so funny and weird and kind of like open to whatever. Mm-hmm. Like all that stuff fell in. It's unavoidable. Like that stuff falls into what you make, you know. So.
True.
Yeah.
You can't. You are the delivery system, so you can't extract your personality from it
in
any way.
Yeah, and it's interesting knowing people, you know, performing like you and just friends I know for 20 years, like especially like on Soundtrack, I've been friends with Mantzoukas and Jesse Falcon and Scott Armstrong, and I know a lot of their personal stuff.
I don't know who Scott Armstrong is, but
he's
Doesn't matter. We don't need to linger.
He used to write commercials. That's all I know.
Okay. Okay.
But he just knowing them, and when you make, they make a choice on stage, sometimes you're like, oh, I get that. I get why you're doing that. I know where that is. Not in a damning way.
No.
Almost like in a like, oh, yeah. And I mean, it helps you because you sort of know what to expect from people. Or not what to expect, but you know where it's coming from. And that probably affects your choice, too.
It is like there could be a point if you did so much improv, you would be sick of yourself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, I can't say anything differently. I can't do a different scene.
Yeah.
I can't escape my choices.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I have...
I deal with that too. I've done a bunch of shows in my life. I've done the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But you do try to wrestle or stay humble and like, fuck, I just want to do one good scene that I haven't done in a while. I want to do one good character, or I just want it to be so stupid and funny.
Yeah.
Like that's ultimately the best show. Like if it's super stupid and funny for the audience too.
Yeah.
That's the best show.
Well, the abandon. Like if you can have...
Yes, that abandonment. Yeah. That is exactly right. Like the logic is there somehow, but you're not stressed about the justification of it all and the callback of it all. But you stumble into a wonderful spill premise.
Oops. Ooh.
And should we pause, Sig? I spilled water. Has this ever happened?
Oh, my God.
Let's keep it live. Let's see what happens, Brian. The show going. I'm going to get a towel.
Okay. All right. Well, just sort of...
That's not going to be enough.
You won't have any... I'll assume what your response to me will be, but I did a ASCAT the other night. Matt Walsh is not here right now, so he would be like, oh, I do that once a month, and I don't care about how often you do ASCAT. This is about me. And he would be like, all right, don't make a big deal about it. And I'd be like, well, you always sort of point out things that I say, thinking it's funny, but sometimes it makes me uncomfortable. And then he would probably be like, oh, wow, now it's going to get really real. I was like, don't get all serious. Let's just like try to stay on topic.
Somebody left their stinky Mexican food in the kitchen.
That'll be me.
Oh.
As he wipes down the water. I did ASCAT for the first time in probably 2 years. Just because every time they've called up, I'm like, I can't. Daddy life. But I was like, yeah, I'll do it. And I felt so, it was a good show, but I felt so old and slow and like things are happening
around me. Who did you play with?
Gil Ozeri and Gimberling and Zach Woods.
I know all those people.
Yeah. And a very funny girl named Rose. And then a very funny guy named Sean, who I don't know their last names.
Dunstan?
Maybe.
Okay. Good group.
Yeah. That was great. It was a great show. No. But, I definitely felt sort of like, I just felt slow.
You could have been, but it is like the return. This is so inside baseball. Mm-hmm. But I think those return shows to a format you haven't done in a while, like the next ASCAT or ASCAT-esque show, you would probably be back to where you felt good.
I noticed I was doing, which I think was a product of...
Mother or soundtrack?
No, the thing I was doing in that show was... calling out missteps that they were doing in the scene.
Like a jerk to fuck with them?
Kind of, but it would always turn into something. They inevitably turned into like character bits, you know, character things. Jason does that all the time, you know.
Like, would it be like, John Adams was our second president, not Thomas Jefferson,
No,
guys.
It wasn't like that.
I hate improvising with people like that.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was a thing of like, in one scene, Rose said that we were on a college tour driving around and stuff. And she's like, and so he's here dropping me off for college. And so it established that she was in college. And then later in the scene, she's like, so I still need to apply to college. I'm like, wait, you haven't applied to college? And she forgot that she had. And so I was like, wait, you haven't even applied? What are we doing here? And it became this thing. But then it was funny.
That is good.
But then there's another thing with Winger. Joe Winger did it too. And he said, I've got a bunch of rules I need you to go by. Da, da, da. And they made a big deal about that. And he's like, okay, so I have one rule and only one rule you need to go by. I was like, well, wait, you just said a bunch of rules. And then that turned into something. But afterwards, I was like, that was kind of my thing of just like listening and like changing the course of it.
But that is the equivalent of solid defense in a basketball game.
Yeah.
Creating turnovers. At the very least, if you're listening and grounding the reality and acting as if it's real, you're playing, you're running the court. I think you're doing a service to the scene.
The thing I don't do as much, and I think it's a product of doing, like, I just do the show soundtrack now, it doesn't need sort of like joke conjugation, if you know what I mean, like where it like heightening necessarily. Okay. You won't have a thing where it'll happen, but it doesn't necessitate like an ASCAT or a Herald and stuff where you have an idea and you revisit the idea, bring it back and change it, that kind of thing. And that was sort of happening a lot. And I was like, oh man, I haven't done this in a while. So there's a lot of kind of like backline, like, see, what else would be funny? Oh, scene's over. Okay, cool.
I see.
Yeah.
So is it more monoscenic, perhaps, in the soundtrack?
Soundtrack is just very, like, you get, you know, they're short, weird, and they're sort of like one direction. Just, like, the scene starts and it kind of goes and ends, and then another scene starts and goes and ends, and you'll be able to do little callbacks of little elements and stuff. But you don't necessarily marry entire storylines as much. Sometimes you will. Mm-hmm. But I've noticed it's sort of like the music gives you the idea for the premise. The show, the scene starts, it's over, a new one. It kind of reboots itself a lot more.
So it makes me think of, you're a famous person and you have a show called Mr. Neighbor.
Super famous.
You're legit. You're legit.
I'm the biggest.
Comedy. We'll say B-plus level celebrity.
We don't have to rate it.
Okay, let's not rate it. Let's not rate it. You're an A-plus in my heart.
All right.
Mr. Neighbor has a special coming out the 24th of June.
Yes, it's Mr. Neighbor's House 2.
Mr. Neighbor's House 2.
And it's June 24th at midnight. And just because it's on Adult Swim, so June 24th is actually going to be, I think, a Saturday night.
So Saturday night after Robot Chicken. Just tell them that.
Yeah, just Saturday. Yeah, we already parsed this.
Yeah. We didn't do it live, but we're doing it live now. But my question for you is, you wrote that with who?
Jesse Falcon and Jason Mantzoukas.
Who's a crazy person.
But, yeah.
And a sweet person.
Yeah.
And Jason Mantzoukas.
Yeah.
Did you guys, let's say in the first one you wrote, did you have a structure in mind? Or is it aping like a Mr. Rogers type show? Like, was the structure dictated by the parody of it all?
When we came up with the idea, we were just talking about kids shows that we liked growing up. And then the more we talked about them, this is just after a show, like literally after a soundtrack. And we were just talking about it. And then we talked about how they all had a weird, like, seeing them now, they all had a weird kind of surreal menace to them. There's just that, and it's that separation, it's that thing of like, you're not,
I would agree with that.
Yeah. So you're not a kid, so you're not sort of applying the willingness to think this puppet is like sweet and kind and stuff. You're kind of like, oh, this is kind of weird, you know. So we were just talking about the different shows that we liked, and we talked about Mr. Rogers being a kind of ironclad in that way, you know. Mm-hmm. He doesn't come off as creepy unless you kind of give it some element. So we just talked about me. It would be funny as me as kind of like an angry kid show host. But then the more we talked about it, it was just, I didn't want to just do a thing where it's just like, I didn't want to be mean to Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I didn't want to be mean to kid shows. I wanted to make it about a guy.
Yeah.
So I guess to answer your question, that was just a launching point. And I got more interested into like the psychology of like why someone might be crazy, why someone might be unstable enough to sort of build a fantasy world. And so that's what the kid show is his sort of like fantasy world.
So you took joy in finding what the dark secrets were behind the manifestations of the show.
Yeah.
The exploration of that.
Yeah. And the other thing was like, Adult Swim, you have permission to do anything there. And that, I think, and that's an improv training thing. It's like, that can be dangerous. Really, mm-hmm. You can just like, you can be as crazy as you want. And sometimes that just feels like an untethered, like, you know, canon of just madness where you're like, all right, that's crazy and that's crazy and that's crazy. And I don't know. Nothing has like any impact. So we wanted to ground it and have some rules for what this universe was and who this guy is. So we had, so we could sort of build off of that, you know. And so we were very, we were pretty strict with ourselves about like, oh, this could happen. And like, no, that that could happen, but it doesn't serve us. It doesn't serve the story that we have for him. It always has to kind of be in.
So did you avoid, did you find yourself avoiding gratuitous cruelty or darkness?
Yeah. Yeah.
For no payoff.
Yeah.
Sort of.
It all, everything had to tie back to him. Like if, so if you haven't seen the first one, it kind of, I mean, reveals a little bit. It reveals a lot. He does this kid show, but we learned that it may or may not be happening in his own head. So when you sort of see all the things that are happening, they're all they're all sort of expressions of like the stuff he's struggling with. Mm-hmm. So the characters there are sort of like emblematic of like a lot.
Give us some examples of the struggles.
That- well, there's a handbag that is representative of his mother.
Okay.
And then at the end of it, and he's having this birthday party and he hopes his mother shows up for the birthday party. And then
does the handbag talk? Is it a character?
It shows up at the party. Uh-huh. And he gets into a big like argument with his mother
and, as a handbag,
as a handbag.
Mm-hmm.
And she's drunk and it's like a big thing. And then he has like, there's this character Mary Holland plays named Miss Lady, who plays a librarian, and he has this, he has a crush on her, but he definitely has like kind of some deep-seated sexual conflicts in himself about like relationships to women and stuff. So
that's good.
Yeah. And then all that stuff, like whether you see that or not, it's more for us to kind of,
right.
You know what I mean?
But I do want to know the structure. Like the structure of it is a kid's show. And then the possible reveal or the M. Night Shyamalan element is like, is this happening in his head or is this really a show?
Right.
And then there's also behavior that can happen. Is the, what was the length of the first one that aired?
22. They're both 22.
Are all 22 minutes what would go out as broadcast, or is there downtime between segments?
It's, what do you mean? Is there a commercial break?
Like Larry Sanders had backstage footage,
oh, no.
And then they had
no.
On the show footage.
It's all just the show.
All the show.
So the first one is a full Mr. Neighbors
Welcome.
Episode where he's having his 31st annual fifth birthday party. And so he, the whole show is about him getting ready for the party. And then it kind of, you know, kind of comes down to this big, big conflict at the end.
Got it.
And then the next one is it's a Mr. Neighbors episode that explodes out of itself. And that's all I'm going to say.
Cool.
Yeah.
You might get meta. I bet you might get super meta.
Maybe.
Okay. I don't want to tease it away. Okay.
We make use of how many versions of reality a human mind might have.
Like a fly's eyeball where there's multiple faceted images we're
maybe.
Dealing with?
This is all like I got this.
Who's
teasing it out, baby?
Who's returning voices wise or actor wise?
Oh, this one, the cast explodes. Like,
tell me who's going to be in. You can tell us that.
Yeah. So this one has Mary Holland's back.
Dave, as the bag?
No, she's Miss Lady.
Miss Lady. And what was Miss Lady's deal?
Miss Lady was the librarian.
How does she relate to his psyche?
Or
what is she emblematic of?
She's a relationship he can never have, basically.
Okay, so the frustrated sort of perfect woman in his mind?
Yeah.
That okay.
Yeah. Dave Tooney is Ice Cream Bruce.
And what is Ice Cream Bruce's sort of struggle for you? Or for Mr. Neighbor?
He's not.
He's not? His comic
he's,
character?
He's just a funny character.
Okay. Dave is funny.
And all the other people, I can't tell you what their roles are because they're all new and...
Oh, Adult Swim told you that you can't release.
Like, no.
If I went on IMDb, there wouldn't be a cast and the person they played?
You'd see it, but I don't want to say what their roles are.
All right, well, then just tell me their names.
Jerry,
I want to get some. Jerry who?
Jerry Minor.
Oh, I love Jerry Minor.
Yeah.
He plays?
He is.
The name of, or the person, the thing, the object?
He's a co-worker.
He's a co-worker at the show.
I see. This is where I can't tell
okay,
you.
Okay. So it's just his credit would be co-worker?
I can't even. I don't want to tell
you
that.
I need gotcha stuff. I'm a good journalist. I'm going to get something that the fans are going to be like, oh, that was good.
Okay. I'll say Gil Ozeri is
I love Gil
Ozeri. A wrongly accused criminal. Mark Evan.
Who enters into your world?
I'm not going to tell you.
Okay.
Mark Evan Jackson. Do you know him?
Yeah.
Sort of an everyman. Who I was like, he and I always go out for the same thing. So I was like, it's good to be working with you instead of fighting against you.
Yeah.
He's the doctor.
Ooh. Okay.
Who else? Joey McIntyre of the Backstreet Boys.
Really?
Yeah.
He plays Joey McIntyre?
He's a host.
He's a host.
He's a host.
Like a TV host? Sort of?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jean Villepeek.
Love Jean Villepeek.
She's a housewife.
Is she related? How is she related to Mr. Neighbor?
She's not.
Is she someone that is representative of his past and his psyche?
No.
A former?
No.
Anything?
No.
Just a generic housewife, sort of.
Yeah.
Or typical housewife.
Yeah.
Okay.
Seth Morris.
Who does Seth Morris play?
Plays my father.
What is father? What's the did he appear in the first one?
No, we had a different, the father in the first one was actually our producer who just was just in a photo in the family, in the, okay. On the mantle.
Okay, good.
And then Colleen Smith, who did some puppets in the first one, also played my mother in that photo and is now my mother in the second one.
And Seth Morris is your dad?
Yeah.
And what is Seth like as your dad?
He's just
like Seth. Is he goofy like Seth?
No. He's kind of tightly wound.
Tightly wound.
It's kind of a sad scene.
Okay.
This one is either, I will say, people need to be prepared that it leans more towards like, it's like a psychological horror show mixed with comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty dark.
It's like a tweaked reality or a tweaked darkness.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's got a dark storyline in it. And we leaned into that. We're like, because we didn't want to make fun of, like, we were thinking, like, if somebody loses their mind, you can't make fun of the circumstances. We felt like if we're going to have a scene, we can find something funny in that scene, but we don't want to make fun of the circumstances that he's going through.
Mm-hmm.
So that was sort of
like discount someone who's dealing with addiction or with depression.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You don't want to be like, oh, look at this goof.
Did Jason pop into camera at all?
No. No,
didn't want to?
No, we had
Jesse Falcon?
No, he had...
Show his testicles or something?
No, he didn't show his anus or testicles or anything, no. Okay. We did a pilot. Originally, we did a pilot, and they were like, well, we're not going to do a series, but you can do a special. In the pilot, he played a character called Scarf Monster that is literally a giant pile of scarves that's a monster. And we're like, do you want to reprise that role? And he's like, that's the fucking hottest... thing I've ever worn in my life. I will never do that again. I was like, okay, cool. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else.
It's okay. You don't have to go through everyone. I was just trying. I think getting the fact that the dad is actually Seth Morris this time is a big deal. I don't think anybody's broke that story yet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
In your special.
You got your gotcha.
I got a little bit of something. Yeah. Like, I think we can tease that when we drop this.
Nice. Okay.
In the long conversation, long form conversation. We'll hold back on it until they listen, but we can even tease the minute where you reveal that Seth Morris embodies a picture of a different man who becomes your father in the second
special. And people who are not listening carefully will be like, wait, Seth Morris is Brian Husky's dad?
Yeah.
That's time is fucked up. Seth looks amazing. Or Brian looks awful. One or the other.
And you shot that in L.A., right?
Yeah, we shot it over in Glendale at, do you know that Glendale Television Studios?
Is that where they did Bang Bang?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is now Shamrock Studios. They've redone it big time.
Cool.
But it's such a, I love that place.
Dude, we're so L.A., we're talking. What's your favorite studio before we go?
Baby.
What's your favorite studio to work at?
To work at?
Yeah, and it could be related to where it is in relation to your home or just
Warner
you've
Brothers.
Had good luck there? Warner, WB in the Valley?
Super close.
Burbank?
Super close.
Back door, right out of Echo?
Oh, man, I can pop. I can ride up through Griffith Park, Long Forest Lawn. Boom,
I'm
going to
go
right
CBS
there.
Radford.
Oh, yeah? That's super close.
So
close, yeah.
I could almost ride my bike there. And I could almost to Warner Brothers. But I like, for some reason, CBS Radford feels quaint.
The thing I liked about this one, it felt like it was a studio maybe in Poughkeepsie or something. It's so tiny and humble and ramshackle, which I love.
I did a show in New York. I got to play a judge on a procedural.
Uh-huh.
And they shoot it in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, I believe, or whatever. And you go there and it's right by the fecal processing center for
the
whole city. There's four domes of centrifugal shit swirling in these state of the art. It looks very state of the art, but it's super industrial and Poison Soil, and it's like, there you go, right in there. And that's where they shoot like Blue Bloods and other shows. But it's like,
but it
New York
like
doesn't
poop.
Care about show business.
No. Like,
in Hollywood, it's going to be like Flowers and Paramount Pictures welcomes you
to
this bench where Humphrey Bogart kissed Ingrid Bergman. And then New York's like, go there, go right. No, that's not you. That's shit factory. Keep going. Nah, that's where you go.
You're in the other shit factory. You pretentious dick.
Well, thank you for joining.
Thanks thanks for getting the gotcha journalism in there.
I love that stuff. Oh, I love being a gotcha journalist.
I want to be able to say more about it, but I'm also very like, I don't know how M. Night Shyamalan does it, man. How does he hold back so much from... Well, he just built in one big thing at the end.
Yeah. Everything has like a second reality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what this... Yeah. Watch. Please watch it. I'm very proud of it.
Yeah. I think it's cool. I will.
All right. Not just you. Everybody's listening.
Oh, sorry. Oh, you're so desperate.
I've got to. This is the game, maybe. This is how you do it. It's not.
You're begging, though.
Our
you're
interaction is
out.
Not real. This is about promotion.
You've hit it. Now you're overstaying. You're welcome. They don't want.
Fuck
they're turning
this.
It off.
Is the car service here? This is bullshit.
You've been listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.